And so we turn our attention to the Seahawks. This last weekend, the Seahawks had an insane 23-20 victory over the Houston Texans. It was one of the most heart-wrenching experiences of our entire lives. I went through various ups and downs of emotion. Various standing and sitting and yelling and frightening babies who were in the room. What were the big takeaways from this game?
I don't know what the big takeaways were, except that...
Richard Sherman's takeaway for an
episode. Well, that was the big takeaway. No, I think it's really just... We've come to sort of expect this from the Seahawks, that they're not going to get blown out, that even if they fall behind, they're going to rally, and you know maybe sometimes they're not going to pull it off because they're going to dig too big of a hole, as was the case against Atlanta in the playoffs. But you know it's they haven't lost a game in lopsided fashion in a really long time, which I think is one of the marks that this is a very good team.
Definitely a couple things to take from it. I mean, the games that you would most compare it to, and we talked about this, the 10 a.m. start games have been pretty similar, have started sluggishly. So that would be Atlanta in the playoffs, at Miami on the week after Thanksgiving last year, at Chicago.
You can even throw in, to an extent, at Washington in the playoffs. They didn't run away quite as much, so it wasn't the same kind of big comeback. But
I do think that from those games last season to this season, I think that the defense is actually better than it was, especially at the end of last season, where the offense propelled the team into the lead or tied. And in every single one of those games, the defense lost the game for them, except for Washington. But that was kind of a different scenario.
Or at least put the offense in a position where they needed to make another drive, at the very least.
In the Chicago game. But the defense this year, I mean, there was plenty of time for them to blow that game. Honestly, if you would have asked me at the time what the chances of Houston hitting a field goal to win the game were, I would have said they were around 99%. It was just something, and honestly, like, unfortunately, that's something that we kind of came to expect at the end of last season, where on that Atlanta drive, we didn't think that they were going to shut them down with that 38 seconds left.
No, I think we were instantly very nervous. And, you know, I think there are
31 seconds,
a fateful number. I think there are a few reasons for that. I mean, first off, you know, just it's hard to stop teams when they are in that kind of scenario where they know that they have to pass at all costs. And, you know, Matt Ryan has done that several times to teams if he only needs a field goal. If he needs a touchdown, it's a different story, as we noticed last week. But then the other thing was, in the playoffs last year, the lack of pass rush was a huge factor in that, and that was very different on Sunday. Even with Michael Bennett leaving the game in the second quarter, you still got great pressure from Cliff Avril and Chris Clemens coming back and playing his most extended action of the season. So that's very encouraging, especially for a team without Bruce Irvin.
That game, and especially the second half of that game, was one of the best performances for the Seattle D-line that we've seen in a really long time. I mean, they're shutting down kind of a pretty difficult two-headed monster in Arian Foster and Ben Tate. I thought that Brandon Mebane played especially well. And then Chris Clemens kind of just returned to form. I mean, he had a sack, a tackle for loss, and another hurry in there. It was pretty crazy that he was able to come back so quickly from that injury and look exactly the same as he did before.
Yeah, and his second game to have so little rest was impressive. And I totally agree with you on Mebane. He was getting so much penetration against the run that really shut everything down, especially once the Seahawks linebackers got into the game and during the second half, once they joined the team.
The real concern there was definitely the linebackers, though. Rewatching this game, most of the big plays that happened, especially in the first half, were because of defensive failures by the linebacking core. And then also, when you looked at the run game, you said it felt like this, and I think the stats bore out also, that either the Texans were being stopped at the line of scrimmage by the D-line, or they were going for 10 yards and being stopped by Cam Chancellor, Earl Thomas, BB.
Yeah, it was nothing in that mid-tier where the linebackers would be making plays. And Bobby Wagner had a very quiet game. I don't know what he ended up with in terms of tackles.
He actually led the team in tackles. He had eight tackles and six solo.
I'm surprised by that because it just didn't feel like he was much of a factor. I wouldn't say that I'm hugely concerned just because of, you know, KJ Wright was banged up in the first half, I think maybe was a factor. The 10 a.m. start, we've seen this before. I mean, obviously, offensively, it was a similar thing where the team looked completely sluggish in the first half and then got it going in the second half. And I wouldn't say it's really something I'm concerned about. So, I mean, clearly it's the Seahawks' weakness, and I think you're going to see a lot of teams target them with the tight end, like Houston was able to do successfully in the first half.
And per Football Outsider stats, the Seahawks are actually number one against the tight end of any team in the NFL still even after that game.
That's crazy.
Despite what Garrett Graham did to them in that game.
Yeah.
So that was surprising. I think that, I mean, I'm not overly concerned about it. We'll talk more about the Colts in a second, but they do have a pretty solid tight end and a really good mid-tier passing game. That's kind of where the Colts excel, is those passes between 7 and 12 yards.
The other thing I think we saw that changed was a lot of zone in the first half, and then they went much more man in the second half and were more effective doing that.
It kind of felt like they had to ease them into the game by playing the zone, and it kind of got them into that big deficit. But once they moved to man, it was clear that everything was tighter. The coverage was tighter. There was no real separation there. Obviously, the big play of the game was the Richard Sherman interception for a touchdown. It was awesome.
It was awesome. I agree.
It was very exciting.
So the one shoe interception return.
And so it was nice seeing that in Richard Sherman's Defensive Player of the Year season. He may not have actually played that great of a game for most of the game. Andre Johnson,
I think it was one of his weakest games in a long time.
Andre Johnson created a lot of separation in a lot of situations, which is a little bit surprising. But all that the national media is going to take from that is Richard Sherman running 58 yards for a touchdown.
Well, that's going to be the highlight reel we're putting together as part of the Defensive Player of the Year campaign.
It was also nice to see that happening, the game, not that play itself, happening against former Defensive Player of the Year, J.J. Watt. And really the takeaway from that is just him bloodied on the sideline.
And angry in the locker room after the game, despite the fact that he could not have done, I don't think, much of anything more.
But J.J. Watt did everything he could do.
I'm so glad that the Seahawks do not have to play against him for, barring the Super Bowl, in which case I'm all for that.
Yeah, we're fine playing against
for
J.J.
4 years.
But I do have to take you to task for something. So, while watching an NFL game, things are said. People say crazy things throughout the game. Our expectations increase and decrease. We hate players. We love players.
There's wild swings.
It's a natural thing. But at one point in the second quarter, you said, "I'm not disappointed in the players, but I am disappointed in the coaching staff." I think you actually said lost faith. You said that you'd lost faith in the coaching staff because they didn't go for a fourth down in the second quarter. And after learning that on that Richard Sherman interception, that was a play that they had specifically practiced for and had the perfect call with Cam Chancellor coming on the blitz, and they practiced it multiple times, and Richard Sherman multiple times had intercepted that pass in practice. How do you stand on this now?
They may have outcoached Gary Kubiak at the end of the game. Just maybe. No, I lost faith was a poor choice of words. What I was trying to say is I don't think anything we saw in Sunday's game, in the first half even, when we were all disappointed, changed my opinion of the ability of the Seahawks players. Because I think, you know, it was maybe a 10 a.m. thing, and then obviously the having three starting offensive linemen out thing. And I was disappointed how little it seemed like the coaching staff adjusted. So we saw a lot of those things then after halftime.
Yes.
It seems like they were kind of obvious in the first half. I'm not really sure why it took until after halftime.
It also turns out that Pete Carroll has faith in Russell Wilson.
Yes, he should.
But you lost faith in Pete Carroll. Pete Carroll has faith in
him. It was a poor choice of words.
Okay. I did take you to task for that one. So moving forward to the Colts for next week. Honestly, probably a more difficult opponent than the Houston Texans.
Which is not what anyone thought coming into the season, certainly. You know, or after they lost to Miami in week two after barely beating Oakland in week one. But now it turns out, well, I don't know, Miami may or may not be good. They got torn up by New Orleans. That's how the NFL is right now. But in terms of the overall takeaway, they're pretty good.
So quickly for the Colts, they are fifth overall in Football Outsiders DVOA, fourth on offense, 13th on defense, and 13th in special teams. So no major weaknesses for them. Offensively, the Colts have been really good on the ground. They're second in rushing offense per DVOA from Football Outsiders. And actually, Ahmad Bradshaw has really been the surprise player for them.
Yeah, my fantasy waiver claim last week, Ahmad Bradshaw, who had, 19 carries for 95 yards against San Francisco before not playing last week, and he's questionable this week.
I would say that it's seeming unlikely that he's going to play, so that's nice for the Seahawks to probably get the Colts without him. And Vic Ballard, they're down to just Trent Richardson and Donald Brown, who have not been as effective as Ballard and Bradshaw.
Yeah, Richardson struggled on the ground, is kind of carrying it over from his Cleveland days, although that's maybe to be unexpected with so little time to adjust to a new scheme and new playbook. And, you know, they like to play Donald Brown in the two-minute offense because he's the guy that knows the offense the best is apparently the rationale for that. But he had the blown blitz pickup that cost them the Miami game in many ways.
Andrew Luck this year has been really solid, obviously. He's kind of moved to a more controlled passing style from the down-the-field passing style of Bruce Arians. And it's kind of borne out in the stats. His completion percentage has risen from 54% to 64%. And it's especially apparent when you look at receivers like T.Y. Hilton. So last year, T.Y. Hilton was averaging 18 yards per catch, and now he's down to around 13 yards per catch. So he's there. Reggie Wayne is there. Reggie Wayne is actually a little bit more than he was last year. He's still in that intermediate range. Darius Heyward-Bey is also down from where he was in Oakland. They're really passing the ball to that middle zone right there.
And Kobe Fleener has been a big part of that as their tight end this year with Dwayne Allen out of the lineup up for the season, who's their more blocking tight end. So, I mean, I don't think any of this is surprising with Pep Hamilton taking over as their offensive coordinator. He was at Stanford, and I think a lot of what the Colts do will be very familiar to fans who have watched Stanford play against the Huskies, especially with Andrew Luck at quarterback and Fleener at tight end. So, you know, I think it's very similar to that. They don't run the ball nearly as well as Stanford does. They don't have that kind of dominant offensive line and run game, but the concepts of a lot of play action and intermediate passing are very similar.
And defensively for the Colts, actually their D-line is their biggest weakness. They're fairly solid against the pass, but the D-line is pretty weak. They actually rank in the bottom third of the league against their run, and it's mostly because of that D-line. They run a base 3-4, and they're without first-round draft pick Bjorn Werner for the next 5 to 7 weeks. I would expect that the Seahawks are going to run the ball quite a bit in this game, probably coming out with the intent to run more than they came out against Houston with the intent to run.
And maybe more than any game this season, I would say, in some ways. I mean, you had, you know, Jacksonville was kind of run to set up play action a lot, but, you know, there hasn't been maybe that dominant rushing performance yet this season. I think we could see that.
And if it's going to happen, I think it's going to be this week. The offensive line is still beat up and probably better suited to the running attack. And then we can't forget that in week one, Terrell Pryor really ran wild against the Colts from the quarterback position, and then Frank Gore, before Jim Harbaugh decided not to run the ball crazily in that 49ers game 2 weeks ago, was running really well. He was at about 8 yards per carry.
Yeah, he was just gashing them for big yardage, much as he did last week against St. Louis when they stuck with the run. And surprise, surprise, they ended up winning that game in a blowout.
Oh, that was a good decision. But this really does feel like strength against strength, so I think it's going to be a really interesting game. Last week, because of the offensive line, it ended up being kind of Houston's strength versus the Seahawks' weakness, and it really swung things there in the first half of the game. But right now, it's going to be the Seahawks' defense, which is their strength, versus that pretty powerful Colts offense.
Yeah, and you know, I think that this could be a game where it could be similar to what I said about the Stanford-Washington game, where there's a lot of offensive efficiency. It maybe is not a lot of drives by both teams. If, you know, Indianapolis is using that short passing game and extended drives, and obviously the Seahawks are one of the slowest-paced teams in the league. So I feel like that could be the situation where it's teams going back and forth kind of very slowly.
I also think a difference maker could be Andrew Luck running. He's a great runner from the quarterback position. Honestly, he's probably run the ball better this season, excepting last week, than Colin Kaepernick and Russell Wilson have this year.
He's deceptively fast.
Yeah.
I'm really excited to see Luck and Wilson go up against each other. Obviously, they've been compared so much, and to have that matchup, I'm really looking forward to it.
And then before we pick kind of chances of winning, Seahawks get defensive end linebacker Leo Bruce Irvin back from suspension. Do you think he'll play, and do you think he'll affect the game?
I think he'll play. I don't think he'll have a big effect. I think it'll be mostly situational with him in obvious pass rushing situations.
It's pretty interesting, the possibility of having Averill, Clemens, and Irvin all pass rushing on the same play.
And potentially even Bennett, who might be able to play this week despite that scary-looking injury.
It really could replicate something like the Giants were doing, where they kind of had the four defensive ends and
four
could just
aces.
Tee off. So having those four back, I mean, it's really what the Seahawks were thinking when they brought in Michael Bennett and Cliff Averill. They're like, we're going to rush the quarterback. I think that Bruce Irvin is different from players, obviously, coming back from injury. He did get to play in preseason, which Chris Clemens did not, so he's not necessarily going to need as much time. And it sounded like from Pete Carroll that he was working out the whole time in West Virginia.
Yeah, I mean, I think he'll be ready to go physically. I mean, he's still learning a new position. That's the other aspect of it. But it is interesting timing for him to be coming back after the linebackers played as poorly as they did in Houston.
I would say that it'll be really interesting to look at third and long plays. First off, who the personnel is. Second off, if they're able to get home against Andrew Luck. But then also, if Andrew Luck gets past those rushers, how far he's going to run for?
Yeah, I mean, that's where you've got to maintain, contain, and be disciplined in your pass rushing, stay in your lane, and get pressure without forcing him to step up into the pressure as opposed to being able to get free.
So any predictions for the game, and then also chances that the Seahawks win, lose?
I would say like 55% chance the Seahawks win.
That's. I think you're going to be more optimistic this week than me.
Wow, that's a first. I'm more optimistic on both teams.
I'm putting it at 50-50.
Huh.
I think partially I was a little bit shell-shocked last week and really thought they would win easily, but it kind of played out the way that we expected it to last week. It just took a long time to play out the way we expected it to.
And, you know, I'm going to go on the record here. I don't think it's going to be another poor 10 a.m. start. I think this time they're going to get off to a better start.
I think that the run game is going to be great. I think that the defense is probably going to be solid. I could see them giving up a few extended drives to the Colts, though. Long drives where they end up scoring touchdowns. And it'll probably be somewhere around a 28-24 game either way.
Yeah, that's about what I was thinking.
So I'm going to put it at 50-50, which is the lowest all season that I would have predicted. We didn't predict week one. I probably would have predicted that at about 60-40 against Carolina.
I might have said 55-45 on that one.
So right now I'm thinking this is probably the hardest game that the Seahawks will have played all year and really will tell us a lot about the team.
You think harder than at San Francisco?
Oh, so far.
Oh, okay. Oh.
Not that they will play all year, but that they have played. This game, I mean, obviously, last week told us a lot about the team. They're obviously resilient, gutsy, various coach words.
grit, I believe, was used a lot on Twitter.
but I think that this week we'll especially know what to expect going forward, and then a couple of easier games against Tennessee, who unfortunately are without Jake Locker.
Yes.
Yes, they are.
It's true with that.
I was really looking forward to seeing Jake Locker play here, and then
the much improved Jake Locker.
We're going to be missing him. But yeah, so 50-50 and 55-45.
Yeah.